Good, all good? Got your button going?
You're good, though. It'll go.
Give it a go. Call this Human Services Committee meeting to order on Tuesday, October 4th, 2022 at 6 p.m. The roll call is being passed around. It looks like all of the supervisors are here, as well as youth and governance. Are there any citizen comments? Seeing none, citizens' comments is closed. Chairman comments, none from me tonight. I'm just thank you all for being here and for the work that you put into the presentations, taking the time out of your day to come in the evening. It really helps us get to speed on what it is that you do so that we have a better understanding of each of your different roles and your department. So thank you again for the extra time you put into this. Any committee member comments? Youth and governance, any comments? Are there any other supervisors in attendance? Approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next on the agenda, we have a resolution for the appointment of Greg Sinan to the Commission on Aging and Disability Services. Is anyone here to comment on that?
Hi, so Mr. Sinan was not able to be with us today. He actually sits on the Village of Summers trustee board and cannot be with us tonight, but he would make an excellent addition to our commission. He does have a son who has Down syndrome, so he will represent the developmental disabled population that we need representation for on our board. So I hope that he passes.
I move to approve.
Second.
Discussion?
I just would like to say that I served with Greg for 6 years on the village board. He's a great asset, and it's wonderful he's volunteering for this position.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Dave, did you second?
Yes.
Okay.
My second. I tried to do the motion, but Ed.
Firemen stick together a little bit.
Any other discussion? Discussion is closed. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next, we have a resolution for the appointment of Carol Abraham to the Commission on Aging and Disability Services.
So Ms. Abraham wasn't able to be with us tonight either, but she will represent the physical disability portion of the population that we serve. She is a former Miss Wheelchair Wisconsin, and she has muscular dystrophies. She is a huge community advocate, and she will make a welcome addition to our board. So I hope she is able to pass her. Thank you.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, discussion is closed. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next, we have a presentation by the Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry.
Okay, hi. Thank you for having us from DWD back again. I'm really proud to introduce my colleague and partner, Dave Schatzman, also known as Jim. He's going to give a presentation about Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry. We've been in partnership since 2016. We're part of the Kenosha Unity Coalition. And what we've been trying to do is to help returning citizens find employment and be successful members of society.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I sit here?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Pass them down, you'll be able to follow along with me. Thought it might be helpful, some of the charts that are in there. You might want to take a second look at it at some point. Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here and talk about Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry. As Nina said, we've been here since 2016. Our goal is really simple. It's helping folks who are returning from prison fully integrate into the community. We're going to talk a little bit about what that means because it's... If I'd like you to come away with one thought, I'll start with it and I'll finish with it. This is more than just helping people get a job. It's more than helping people get a house. It's not about barrier abatement. It's about helping people to think in a new way and to come to a point where they become community assets. They're raising their children, They're going to PTA meetings. They are supporting the community as assets in the community, people who are working, paying taxes, and part of the fabric of community, not just returning and hanging out. And so a lot of what we do, I might be getting a little ahead of myself, but a lot of what we do is cognitively based, so that we're also helping people get back to work, but they're helping them, we're helping them fully integrate into the community. So what happens when a person comes back? We can look at that first slide. Come back. For the majority of high-risk offenders, and that's what I might say to you, we're working specifically with the Department of Corrections to work with some of the highest-risk offenders who are coming back to your community. And what we mean by that is all the data from the Department of Corrections and justice-related academics so that you should direct the majority of your money and attention to people who are most likely to commit a crime, most likely to end up back in prison, both of which are costly to a community. And so we are only working with high and medium high-risk offenders as they're assessed by the state. They generally come back to the same neighborhood, the same family situations, the same antisocial associates, with the same dysfunctional view of the world. And KVM offers support and hope to those who have little belief that society wants them back. You know, there's this tension. Having worked with this population for a long time, which been when I began this work 15 years ago, it was very surprising how afraid they were when they came back home. They really didn't know what to expect. If you've been gone 20 years, imagine being gone from Kenosha for 20 years and coming back and seeing what you see now. Harbor development and, you know, houses that have been raised. It's very disconcerting for somebody to come back after a long prison stay. And so KVM's helping to transform their thinking, reunite them with their families, become healthy and contributing members of society. On the next slide, you see just one example of a gentleman. Matter of fact, Eric is one of the first people we worked with when we started in 2016. He had spent 20 years in prison. He came back home. He realized that he didn't have a lot of family support. He had done a lot of bridge burning before he'd gone to prison. Coming back home, his family wasn't all that excited he was coming back. He's not quite sure where to begin, and as his parole agent suggested that he come to KVM. And he said to me, I just feel like I'm starting over. And now what's different? You know, he's part of a key part of a faith community. He's been crime-free since his return. He's got a car, a job, a place of his own, a healthy connection with his family. He's been rebuilding his relationship with his daughters, which when you're gone 20 years, I mean, that's just, it's like you're not their parent when you come back into their lives. And who wants somebody telling them what to do when they're 24? You know, so it's really a tough job. And after a year of successful progress when he came back, you may have seen the article that he was featured in the Kenosha News in February of 2017. On the next slide, you'll see the impact. One of the impacts that we do that is a result of what we do is that recidivism is lower. And why is that important? Lower recidivism means that people are staying connected to their programming longer. You know, they go back to prison, everything stops again. They come back and they start all over. So we're keeping them connected to their programming, which keeps a straight line progress going on. But it also helps keep the family together. It gives a family stability that's not there with somebody chronically in the revolving door of going back to prison and coming back. And as you can see, our goal has always been to reduce recidivism by 50%. And right now, we're somewhere around 60%, keeping people going back. And then again, reminding that this is statistically the group that's most likely to be going back. And so we track this data. It is very important to us. And we want to make sure that we are tracking our outcomes. On the next page, you see a chart where this was developed by Dr. Helen Rosenberg at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. We try to keep ourselves in line with research so that what we're doing, we know we're making impact. It's not just that we say it. This is a chart from the from UW Parkside, and what you see is one of the things that we work on very hard is that you want to lower the things that cause risk. And the list across here, these are things that we work on and have specific therapeutic therapies for: depression, anxiety, stress, the sense of entitlement, sense of justification, desires for control, rationalizing. There's a lot of that going on in criminal activity. Well, you know, I just, it was okay to hold the corner liquor store because I've never gotten anything in my whole life anyhow. That kind of thinking has to stop, or you're just going to the next time you're in trouble, you're going to commit another criminal activity and justify that. And the other is blame. And you can see that all those categories went down, some of them significantly, in terms of how they thought about the world around them. And this is really the missing piece in corrections. Corrections doesn't have time to do this. Their caseloads are huge. They see 100 to 150 people on average as a caseload, which means that they're generally seeing about 15 minutes a week, or sometimes even 15 minutes a month. It's a check-in. How are things going? Are things going okay? Our program is geared to 4 to 6 hours a month with somebody, where we're really, we're talking through things. We're doing cost and benefit analysis, where you see, okay, what I know what you're thinking about. Tell me, you know, let's line this out. We get people thinking and thinking about what they want to do. And so one of the phrases that we say, and we've learned this, that personal transformation is what reduces recidivism, not compliance. And really, that's the main tool that corrections has. They say, look, if we can make you afraid enough not to do another crime, maybe you'll be okay. Well, we don't raise our kids that way. It's a terrible psychological way to deal with somebody, to make them afraid enough not to do the wrong thing. You have to help them learn the benefits of doing the right thing and what they are. And quite frankly, a lot of the people that we work with have never been taught that. They were raised by the kids in their neighborhood while their parents were somewhat unattended. A lot of these young men, in particular, that we see, have not had the kind of nurture and care growing up that most of us have the benefit of being at home. And so we're bringing that in a little later. That's a key piece of what we're doing. Reducing recidivism is really good economics. This was a chart when our program was quite small yet in 15, 16, and 17. And you can see that the average cost for standard recidivism rates that the state sets for the number of participants we had would be about $1.275 million. Those are the kinds of, you know, the difference between that and the earlier numbers. You can just see that over the course of these 3 years, Adler University in Chicago estimated that we saved the state over $1.3 million in a $220,000 program. That's very cost effective. And so we do need to reduce costs, and we do need to have people paying taxes and taking part in the economy and, you know, paying into your systems that keep your streets up and keep your businesses going. So that's, we find that to be really critical in the way that we help folks along. And as you can see, this past year, partly due to some policy changes with corrections, we weren't putting as many people in jail or prison. There's been a lot of press around that. But the last year, only 1% of our folks, 2 out of 208, actually went back to prison last year. This has been a really good year for us, and we've been making a difference. You just think of the families that are staying together as a result of not going back to prison. Out of 208, only two of them went back to prison in the last year. This has the potential, keeping people connected, to create very responsible citizens. All 208 of our participants, now I'm kind of catching up to where I started, take part in cognitive services. Most programs like ours do not do this. They try to get you a house, they try to get you a car, they try to get you a job. That's it. For somebody whose thinking is broken, and in technical terms we call that antisocial cognition, that cognition remains. It's never been abated. It's not been interrupted or intervened in. They're taking those into the job site, and they're failing at catastrophic levels in their jobs. They're taking that into their home lives, and it's just creating some of the same problems they had before they went to prison. So really changing thinking is about really what this is about. It's intervening in thoughts of rationalization, justification, entitlement, blame, and then, which in the end actually produces quite a bit of stress for the client themselves. So why does KVM work? It's really simple. We're not a social safety net. We are not asking for perpetual funds for housing or transportation or anything like that. We're asking for funding to help folks change the way they engage their communities. That's really the service that's going to make the most impact. your allocations, and I want to thank you for the allocations you've made to us in the last 4 years. These allocations lead to investment in human capital. And that's, I think, what's really different about the way that we do this. Really interesting note, according to a Rutgers study in the child welfare system, 1 in 10 is living with someone who's on probation. It's a huge number. And the other thing you'll find, as won't be surprising, is that's concentrated in neighborhoods. So in certain neighborhoods, it might be 6 or 7 out of 10 or with somebody who's on probation or who has been in the criminal justice system. And so breaking that cycle with the adults who are coming back is, as the study showed, has the most powerful opportunity for changing trajectories for the young people in the household. So we do tend to do what our parents hold up as values. And so why is CAVM important to your community? We're helping with folks like Nina at the job center to create a job-ready workforce, improving job retention and essential life skills. This is a form of economic development, moving people off of community services and into the job market. And more money, as you know, has been put into hard skills. So if we get people to think in the right way, when they get a welding, come out of a welding boot camp or a CDL boot camp, they're going to be going into living wage jobs and making an impact not only in their household. This is a good neighborhood investment as well. These are neighborhoods that are really challenged economically. You start pumping money into those neighborhoods, things improve. And we really are, we're not cherry picking. We're taking some of the most vulnerable in the community. Those pictures say 1,000 words. And these are some of the faces of the people that we helped here. Shannon on the fork truck has been working at Rust-Oleum for 3 years after a 15-year sentence. Endel is working at the city of Racine after 2 7-year stints in prison and multiple drug charges. Johannes is a fairly new participant here in Kenosha who's now a student at Gateway and beginning to learn some skills. He wants to be an accountant. He's very strong in math. Carl was in prison for 16 years and is now managing the Hospitality Center of Racine as the executive director. This person has really grown. Natasha runs her own business. Prince, who's driving a truck, just got his CDL about 4 years ago and now is making a living wage. And Eugene is a Rising Star Award winner from our annual recognition event, is making a difference here in the community. Probably the most dramatic change, if you look in the upper level in the middle, Anton is the third generation drug dealer who now has his PhD from Howard University and is an assistant professor of history at Delaware State University. You're not saying everybody's going to be a college professor, but it is an interesting statistic. People with master's degrees recidivate at 0%. Just an interesting little piece of data. One of my consultants used to say, let's just get everybody a master's degree. That would kind of fix the problem, wouldn't it? Well, it might. It might. So, are there any questions?
I have a couple.
Sure.
On your page, why does KVM work? Two questions.
Okay. Kind of skipped over that, didn't I? Now I realize
that. Not really, but I mean, maybe you could explain some of these practices and therapies for those who aren't familiar with them.
Sure. We use a program, an assessment program called the Ohio Risk Assessment System. It was built by the University of Cincinnati, the premier criminal justice school in the United States, and designed by Dr. Ed Latessa, who ended up being a consultant to Wisconsin Department of Corrections a few years ago as they were beginning to overhaul to their new system. And one of the things that the system says is that, you know, again, the old system was we're going to try and frighten you into not committing a crime. You know, ultimate thing is, you know, if you kill somebody, you're going to get the death penalty. Murders didn't really go down in that climate. It's not really the way that people commit crimes, often out of desperation. And so really there needs to be a system that builds in some reward, but also builds in some real change in the way that people think. And this system, when somebody comes into our program, they get, this assessment is filled out. And what's nice about this is that it's tailored to the individual. And so the individual has their own assessment. We're not saying these are the 5 things we need to do and you'll be good. That doesn't work for anybody. And if it does, it's kind of a lottery win. You really have to tailor your programming to the people who are in. So we look at the places, and it could be mental health, could be addiction, could be one of the most common areas that we work in is criminal associates. We are who, our mothers were right. We are who we hang out with. We think like them. We act like them eventually. And so, you know, breaking those bonds of criminal associates and helping them build a new a set of pro-social people around them, or working more closely or respecting more the pro-social people who are in their family, and redirecting that social network often begins to correct an awful lot of problems. And even in a neighborhood, it begin to correct. And so we're working in that way. One of the things we work on is, and which for some folks is justification. Some people can justify anything. You know, I stole that cookie. What's the little kid? Oh, it's for you. You know, no, it wasn't. Just got caught. And so how do we begin to change the way a person thinks about justification? And that's around helping them take responsibility for what they did, helping them to understand the levels of victimization that they've created, which I got to tell you, for our folks, is almost always a shock. When they begin to really break down, oh, when I stole from that person and they couldn't pay for their car because they stole all their money, you know, or held at that liquor store and the guy ended up losing his business because he didn't have capital to keep going. You know, you start to realize the level of victimization that happens when the crimes that have occurred. It's a revelation to a lot of these young men. And so we're helping them to appreciate the fact that you know, stealing money from a stranger is not a victimless crime. You know, it doesn't only hurt the person there, it hurts their family. You know, you're taking food out of their kids' mouths or new shoes when they go to school. These have ripple effects. So helping them to break down that kind of justification is really, really important, or simple rationalization. If I don't do this, I'm not going to get anything, because that's just the way the world works. Well, most of us at this table know that's not the way the world works. And so if we can help folks to think in completely new patterns, it really is a therapeutic process. It's more than just giving somebody, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 worth of assets and saying, okay, there you go. It's your only problem was you didn't have enough money. Now that you have enough money, you're fine. No, it doesn't really work that way. So really, we're really working on how people approach the world around them. And we start with their inner circle and then begin to work out. And so most of what we do is helping them to function better in their world, to understand more about how the world works. And then, you know, once we start to work towards job readiness, we're talking about really helping them to understand the U.S. business culture. And that's really important, because getting in a job can be catastrophic for somebody who only sold dope.
Yeah.
The rules are much more strict. You can't just get up when you want. You can't just leave when you want. Your boss has certain expectations, and so do your coworkers. Being able to work as a team. A lot of folks who have more set antisocial behavior, they really want to give me a job where I don't have to talk to anybody. Have you ever heard of a job like that? There is no job like that. So let's figure out how to talk to people. Let's figure out how to make small talk. Let's figure out how to, you know, folks who have come out of gang life very often, they're not very good at small talk. It's really interesting when you meet them. Their hearts are not quite as broken as you think they are, but they're very dysfunctional. Their view of the world is just, it's shocking when you hear it. So that's where we're working. And then we work, once that begins to happen, we start to work towards job readiness. Usually about 3 months, we start working toward job readiness. Because really, they have to learn how to function in the community before they go into a job.
And under Faith-Based Foundation, you have a note, we encourage people to focus on the greater good in quotes.
Yeah, and I say that because we're not a proselytizing organization. We don't do prayer groups. We don't do Bible studies. You know, I think of what we do in more of a Mother Teresa sense. You know, we're offering our service to people based on what we believe. We're not trying to make them think like we're really, like we think. Although our staff is pretty sophisticated, some of them have seminary degrees. And so if someone's willing or interested in going down that journey as part of their therapeutic process, we're more than skilled to be able to help them understand and help them connect to a church. We have a large network of pastors who know us really well, can help refer them to places of worship that might be a good fit for them.
I'm really curious about the disconnecting them from the other antisocial criminal relationships. Like, in what way
it's really hard. I'll tell you, it's hard because, you know, if you've come out of gang mentality in particular, there's a narrative you come out with. These are the guys that got my back, and they're the only ones who care about me. And that can even go so far as to their family, their parents, and aunts and uncles and grandparents. So when you come back in, first, I think the first idea is you have to help them understand that this is the path back to trouble. Let's do another cost-benefit analysis. What does it mean to hang out with people who continue to sell dope? Even if you don't do it, if you're in the car with them, it's going to be a violation of your rules of supervision, and you're going to at least be held as an accomplice. So, you know, let's talk about the reality of it. The other side of that is that KVM becomes a place where healthy pro-social relationships are modeled. And so every day they come in and they begin to see from the staff how we behave with each other, how we talk to each other, what it means to talk to each other with respect, what it means to respect a difference of opinion and how people think differently. And it's really an enculturation. And if they can begin to walk down that path, they're going to be less comfortable with who they hang around before. Their language isn't going to match up anymore. The way their view of the world isn't going to match up anymore. And they're going to find themselves moving away from that. And in the same way that they might have moved towards it, now they're going to move away from it with encouragement. And we also use folks in our program as mentors. And that's pretty profound. When they meet somebody they did time with, they have a great job, you know, their kid's on honor roll, and they're like, how did you do all that? Oh, there's a little street talk that goes on and says, hey, you got to do something different. You knew that when you came out of prison. Most folks come out of prison highly motivated to do the right thing. 3 weeks with the people they hung out with before they went in, and they're right back into what they did before. And so really it is helping them to stay away long enough to begin to create new networks, having these mentors meet with them so that they can begin to realize, you know, there's a better way to do this. And you can hang out with this mentor, and they're not looking over their shoulder. They go back, those guys, they're looking right over their shoulder again. We tell them, do you want that anxiety? Do you really want that stress in your life? You know, what did you tell yourself when you came out of prison? What did you promise your kids when you came home?
So, I know we have another presentation, so I don't want to go too long.
Sure.
This is all very interesting. So, how did you all get started, like, quickly?
Mm-hmm.
And then, why 208 participants, and why only the most high risk?
Sure. We got started in 2005, and it was really an initiative in Racine with the Racine Police Department. They were modeling our program. They wanted to model a program that was being done in High Point, North Carolina, that was a gun reduction program. It was really successful. I was fascinated, but I was on a team, and originally the city was going to run this program, and then they decided kind of in the 11th hour that they didn't want to fund it at that level, and so they looked to the nonprofit community who was at the table and said, who wants to do this? Well, we had already been working with a lot of people who had these issues for since 2002, and so we began to understand what it was about. So we took on the program, and so we've been running it since 2005 and had some recognition as a national best practice for the ways that we do this, recognized by the International Society of Chiefs of Police and the U.S. Department of Justice. And so in that time, we're at 200 because that's all the financial capacity we have to support. There's only so many seats you can put in. And we're determined not to be like the Department of Corrections and put in 15 minutes a client. We're determined to our 4 to 6 hours a month. So our cost per client is actually fairly low when you compare it to states employees. It's about $2,000 a client is what we allocate for the outcome of having somebody to have a job and to function in a more pro-social way. That work usually takes up to a year.
$2,000 a client, and that takes up to a year?
Mm-hmm. It's I can show you our cost centers. There, nobody's getting rich doing our
work. I don't know. Getting rich there. And what is your connection with other county services? How are you connected with other county services as well as other nonprofits in the area? Mm-hmm. What kind of partnership network do you have?
For several years, we were part of a group called the Kenosha Unity Coalition, which was actually pointing a lot of their energy at prison reentry and inequities in our community. And we have consistently collaborated very closely with Kenosha County. Nina and her team are very well known to us. We were very close together, especially once they start to get ready for job placement. And so some of the hard skills, we don't do any hard skill training. So if somebody's training in welding or a CDL, or they want to get their CNA, or these kinds of things, we often work with the programs that the county is already supporting. So we're not duplicating services. We're not spending the same dollar in two different places to do the same thing. So we're very careful about not spending money twice.
Any other questions from committee members?
I have a question real quick.
Yes.
This won't take long. Of those people that reoffend, do they reoffend at a, I want to say, the same type of...
It's a really good question. Very rarely, and I can send you more data. Almost nobody that we're working with creates a crime against people again. Those kinds of crimes, and a lot of people who come to us have had a lot of violence in their lives. That violence reduction is a major piece of what we're doing, and it's just part of the part of what we're doing to help people to understand that they need to be better citizens. And so the people who go back to only of the 208, I believe only one of them over a 3-year period committed a crime using a firearm. Prior to working with us, of that 208, about 75 committed their crime using a firearm. So firearm reduction crimes tend to go very, very low in our program.
Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned you work with the job center. Do you have relationships directly with private companies as far as getting your people into their places of employment?
We're really good job coaches. We help people to interview better, and boy, in our climate right now, almost all of our, I think the number right now is 170 that 208 are currently working. This is a very good, very favorable job market. Employers are struggling right now to be fully staffed. And some of the standards, the way they were able to be discriminating 10 years ago, they can't now. They really have to look to people who have who might have some criminality in their background and try to sift through who's the least risky to them. Almost all of our folks are working. And part of that is that they're able to say that they're in programming, you know, and therefore less likely of a risk.
Yes, thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. So what's the total caseload? Is it 200? What's your ongoing caseload at any?
Yeah, that's interesting. We track all 208 that we've worked with for the last 3 years. Each case, we have three case managers, and they all work with roughly 35 to 50 people apiece. And some of those folks are being seen every week, especially when they first get out. About 3 months of being seen every week. And that second 3 months, basically people are being seen every other week. And they're started by that point. A lot of them are getting jobs, and we're seeing them a little less. We're doing phone check-ins, and sometimes we have a day where they can just drop in at any time of the day. So we have a lighter touch with people who've been in the program more than 6 months.
And if I understand the program, the caseload is of the most difficult cases, is that? And what percent of that is the total potential caseload that exists? Does anybody know that?
Yeah, we do. We consider on the high side of high risk is about 2/3 of the people that we see as assessed by corrections. And the other third range anywhere from what we call medium high to medium risk. And that's a numerical assessment through that the Department of Corrections uses to kind of manage their parolees.
Thanks.
Supervisor Stock first.
Just real quick, did you address the, I'm sorry if I missed it, but is there like a dropout rate, or what keeps people in your program long term?
Pressure, initially. All of our folks, we only take people who are on probation and parole. And so we work very, very closely with, that's a really good question, I didn't address that. All of our persons are on extended supervision, and so we're working very closely with their parole agents. And so there's a little pressure there. Once they opt into the program, the parole agent wants to make sure that they stay in the program and get the help that they need. And if we lose contact with people, we often will meet with the participant at the parole agent's office. They have to show up to the parole agent, so we'll meet them there. And reconnecting the parole agent will gently encourage them to stay in programming.
Thank you.
Supervisor Thomas?
So a couple questions, I'll ask them all at once. Mm-hmm. So when they're about to get out, do they have to sign up for the program? And I know some of them will probably come out of that transitory facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some of those can already start working and they go to jobs there. if you're involved there? And then how many people do you have to refuse because you don't have staff?
We're at about somewhere between a half and three quarters, depending on funding here in Kenosha. We would love to be able to have a full-time office. That would open up another 10 seats for folks. And this makes an impact in the community. I mean, these are long-term impacts. When somebody transforms from being active in criminal activity to becoming an asset in the community, it's a huge financial turnaround, and it makes neighborhoods safer. So did I answer both your questions?
Answered one, the last one. But how many people come out of the, are they applying for the
They do
program?
Apply.
Are they still in
This,
jail?
we work with
And then
this.
did you find them a job when they're in the transitory, I don't know what the name of that
Yeah,
facility
yeah, yeah. There's
is,
a,
over by Brass used to be.
Yeah, and there's a Sturtevant Transitional Facility in Racine County as well. We work with the social workers who recommend people who are a good fit for our services. We've really gotten to know them over the years. So the social worker talks to the probation agent who's assigned about 6 months prior to release. And we begin to have some conversations, share material with them 6 months before they get out. So we develop a bit of a relationship. So when they come out, it's not cold. They are all referrals from the Wisconsin Department of Corrections.
Other questions from supervisors, committee members? I have one last question.
Sure.
You talked about the difficulty sometimes reconnecting with your family. Maybe there were burned bridges before, especially like the example with the daughters who are now grown. Mm-hmm. Are there components of the program that are specifically geared around maybe parenting or for those who still maybe have small children? Or
we recommend people out to parenting programs, but a big part of our programming is family reunification, because and it's just part of the curriculum that we do because it's critical. I mean, they have to have somebody to talk to, and you know, a mom or dad, a key auntie or grandmother are going to be key to reconnect with again. And if you, the last thing they remember is you stole their television to get a fix, they're not going to feel very warm and fuzzy about having you in their house. And so we talk about how to do that. And here's a really simple way. I think I can say this pretty quickly. We will tell folks, stop asking them for stuff. We know it's hard for you. Ask us for stuff. Don't ask your parents. Don't ask your sisters and brothers. Remember their birthdays and send them a card. You know, when you see your daughters, tell them you love them. Don't ask them for anything. Just be there when they're ready to open up. It's amazing how relationships start to fix if you stop pressing into them. Just let them kind of organically come back. So that's the advice that we give to people. Remember their birthdays. Remember your parents' anniversary, like any kid would. Just don't ask them for anything yet. And I would just like to leave you each with, I'll pass these around different directions, our 2021 annual report and our flyer for the program, and if that might answer any other questions that you might have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time. It was excellent. Next up, Mr. Nelson, Veteran Services.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
And Board Supervisors. I'm Ollie Nelson, Director for Veteran Services, and it's quite an honor and privilege to be presenting today on Veteran Services. Let me start about our mission first. Our mission is to assist veterans and their eligible dependents with obtaining local, state, and federal benefits. Pretty much that's what our office do. We have approximately about 13,500 veterans in Kenosha County. That's including dependents, eligible dependents, and we advocate for our veterans. And the reason why I use the word advocate, because I don't work for the VA, I work for Kenosha County. So if there's a claim that we see that the VA is doing wrong or not making the right decision, we can go after them and make sure that they do the right thing. And that's where you stand. The president just signed the PAC Act. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but it's, if you look at TV, you probably see a zillion commercials about Camp Lejeune contaminated water that affects veterans. And we know there's lawyers or law firms out there looking at the opportunity to go after these veterans and have them sign up with them so they can get a claim into the VA. But the law is written at a federal level that the veterans should not have to pay for initial claim. You know, if it goes beyond the appellate level, the appeal process, then they might pay. But there's no way that a veteran should have to pay for a claim. And that's why our office right here in Kenosha exists. Because we will take them from the very start of those claims and work it all the way up to the U.S. Court of Appeal. And if you see a veteran and they say, I'm going to go get a lawyer, tell them, hold up, go see the veteran service officer and they should help you out with your claim. I think I have a presentation up there. Next slide, please. So my staff is four of us in there, four full-time personnel. Myself as a director, got Jennifer Blasey as the deputy director, and then we got Brad Billen. He was Racine County Veteran Service Officer. When I left there in 2015, he took that job over. He went to Parkside, and it so happened he was out of job, and there was a slot available in my office, and we end up picking him up, and he's doing a great job for us. He just came up on his one-year anniversary. Hopefully I can keep him around for a little longer.
Huh? It's today.
It's today? Yeah. I should have told him happy anniversary today. Make well, sure I let him know tomorrow. He told you that, okay? He didn't tell me, but I knew it was coming up soon. Then we have a brand-new guy, Jose Sanchez. He came on board in April 18, 2022. So he's going through his training mode right now. We're getting him up to speed because we need all the help we can to take care of those 13,500 veterans in Kenosha County. Next slide, please. Okay, the 2021 review and highlights. So some of the things that we do, our budget is $391,545. The only thing that comes from the state is at $14,600. The rest of it is tax levy dollars. We're put on there for a budget for expected to increase because our office is going to be doing a lot more when it comes to the PAC Act. You know, we're going to be extremely busy because they're not only talking about Camp Lejeune contaminated water, they're talking about Agent Orange from Vietnam veterans, burn pits from the Gulf. It's going to be a lot of claims going out. And they're already filling up our queue already, so we're preparing for that. The federal money that we brought into the state is $107 million. That money is not going into Kenosha County bank account, but it's going into those veterans' bank account. But they're spending that money here in Kenosha. They're buying gas. They're paying for their grocery. They're sending their kids to school. So the majority of that money is being spent here. And that's the gratification of doing the job because we know it's a major economic impact in our community because many of those individuals will be showing up in economic support looking for some handouts. So we're just thankful that we can help them. I'll share a story with you. I came to Kenosha in 2015, ran across a gentleman, and he was a Vietnam veteran. And he was filing a claim with the VA for many years. And he said, I'm just tired of federal government. They just deny me all the time. And I say, stick with it. And I filed a claim for him, and I knew it was going to be denied. I even went to Brookside Nursing Home to see him and have him sign some documents. 2020 come around, we got hit with the COVID-19 in March. April, I got a phone call from this gentleman and said, hey, look, I just got a check for $497,000. He said, what did I do with it? And I said, well, I recommend that you take that down to the bank as soon as you can possible before it blow away and you can't get that money. So he did take that out and put it in his bank. And unfortunately, he lost both his legs. You know, he was a double amputee. He was a Vietnam veteran guy, had contracted Agent Orange and had neuropathy and other conditions, and he lost both his legs. But that's a success story. Never given up. The state don't bring us a lot of money in. I mean, other than the property tax credit, and you only get the property tax credit if you're a veteran and you're 100% service connected. And you have to have a lot of conditions going on with you to be 100%. They do offer the Wisconsin GI Bill. Veterans is 30%. Their families can go to school. And the University Wisconsin University System. So that's a really good benefit. So that's pretty much where most of the money comes, approximately about $3 million altogether. We just completed another success story, just completed phase one of Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. We're in the process of phase two, and I think there's some money in the budget they're going to probably propose for phase three of that park. Really nice park out in the western part of the county, out there in the Twin Lakes area. If you haven't been out there, please do, by all means, go out there. It's a beautiful lake, 35-acre lake called Freedom Lake, and a 350-acre property. Your kids can have fun, family can go out, barbecue, and just have a good time. Beautiful place out there. Next slide. So I think that's a repeat of what we had before, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's new.
It's new. Okay, all right. So this is another part of extended service out in Twin Lakes. We used to, prior to the pandemic, we used to meet in the western part of the county. If Muhammad can't get to the mountain, we take the mountain to Muhammad. So that's how we end up in Twin Lakes. We used to be in Silver Lake and Trevor, but since we just started that process back up in July, we're going to give it some time. If we get more clients, then we'll go twice a month instead of once a month. Our hours are from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. We don't have lunch hours. We kind of make sure that if people are working and the only time they can get in my office is during lunchtime, we're open for lunch for that, to help them. Homeless veteran stand down, we normally do that every year. We have a veteran celebration that's coming up. We couldn't do any face-to-face major events during the pandemic, so we're looking forward to November 5th. That's going to be a veteran celebration. People probably should be getting some information on that on social media or some form of promotion out there. We have to attend accreditation conferences where we have two state conferences we have to go to and one national conference. If you don't have those accreditations, you can't process claims, and the VA will shut you down. So it's important that we send our people to get educated and continue to help our veterans in our community. They said, office maintained partnership with outside organizations. Sometime I might run into a situation where we might have to put a veteran in a hotel for 10 days. My budget is very small, so I look for other organizations out there like the VFW, the Veterans of Foreign War, Disabled American Veterans, the American Legion, and they can match. Well, if we put 300, they put 300, and we help that veteran out and keep them in a hotel. The job that we do is a very gratifying job. You know, you change people's lives, you improve their quality of life. And the big wins is like celebrating excitement with that veteran who got $497,000. You've been waiting, you know. And then you have people sometime come to your office and they get a decision, a positive decision, and they break down in tears, tears of joy. So it's a very gratifying job. I enjoy doing it. I wore the uniform for 29 years in the United States Navy, and there's nothing else I would rather do than take care of our veterans. I love it. I don't think, is there anything else on that? Okay, so this was a ribbon cutting ceremony for the park out there in the western part of the county. That happened October 12th of last year. We had a big ribbon cutting ceremony and quite a few people showed up. We just recently had three benches that we dedicated to that park, and also we found some funding through the help of Snap-on to purchase our first, you know, shelter, and that's for the Army. And we're going in order: Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, Space Force, and Coast Guard. In that, so if you know of anyone who's willing to give money toward helping our veterans, by send them my way, and I will turn them over to Matt Collins out in the parks, and then we'll make it happen. I think that's probably about the end of my presentation, but I open it up for any questions that you might have. Yes, Supervisor Gerson.
Ali, I
yes, sir.
Know there's an organization called the CVSO
Association
of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And it's a leading advocacy group for veterans in our state. Are you slated to become the president of that organization?
In a month of October, which we're in right now, we'll be taking over as a president for the 72 counties and 11 tribal nations, 83 strong. So I've been a member of that association since 2011, and a lot of talented individuals in there. There are people who've been there for 25 years and 30 years, all purposely driven to take care of veterans in our community. To add to that, I had a meeting with the director for the VA regional office. That's a federal level, the only regional office we have in the state of Wisconsin. And the Veterans Service Center was ranked number one in the country. So you can tell the level of work that they do and recognitions of that. And every state have a VA regional office, even in Puerto Rico, the Philippines, Hawaii, places like that. So I think that's a really significant achievement in order to be ranked number one across the entire country, even outside the continental United States.
So, Ali, I think I just want to recognize your leadership there and thank you for taking that. I think it's a privilege to have you running that, being the lead in that organization, and I think it's an honor for Kenosha County.
So it's a great organization. I mean, it's you have to go to being second vice president, first vice president, to become president. So it's a little training in between. And, you know, you don't screw things up, and it's only for a year as president. but it's really, really gratifying, and I really appreciate, you know, doing it for the entire state, but also represent Kenosha County as a whole.
Congratulations.
Okay, thank you, man.
Well, it's good year with you.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Ali, you mentioned about the workload that you're anticipating in 2023, and the increase in your budget is about $79,455 for 2023. Is that to hire an additional staff member?
We're trying to get an additional staff member. We're going to get the job done no matter what. I mean, we got to stay and work till 9 o'clock at night. We'll do that because we take care of veterans. But it would help us. You know, I have to be concerned about morale issues of my people, and I don't want, you know, overwork people and people start stressing out and things of that sort. But I think it would be helpful if we can get an extra body.
Okay, because I know when I spent time in your department, there was a constant influx of people. And as you said, working through lunch hour to help and to help with programs, you were someone was helping with a death benefit with her husband passing, because a lot of people don't know what the next step is.
Yeah.
And I worry about that with your employees being burned out because of all of these new things that are coming in 2023.
I'm a military structure guy, and I kind of like to read the accident report before it happened. So, you know, we're planning ahead. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're not going to leave anybody behind and not take care of them. We're going to find a way to get it done. But it would be nice if we can have an extra body to help us out, because, like you said, we have to be concerned about morale and stressing people out and not losing good people. Because when you lose good people, then you have to start over and train, things of that sort.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other?
Any other questions?
Aside from that, are there any other needs that your office needs going into the next year? Is that the biggest?
No, I think that's more significant. I mean, other things, that the smaller things, I figure those things out. But you know, just having an extra body, because we have a park, we have a veteran honor portal. You know, the PAC Act is a major thing. Never in the history of long the VA's been around, they've seen anything like that. So we have to be prepared for that, because there are going to be a lot of people coming in our doors. Some people have the option to sue the United States government. Never happened before, but you know, they're probably going to be asking my office. I tell my people, if it's suing the government, I don't want to have nothing to do with that. They have to figure that out on their own.
If you were able to get this position, would you foresee it filling it pretty quickly?
Yeah, we want to get the right people. I don't want to just fill it quickly. My quest would be to get the right person for the, you know, for that job.
Mm-hmm.
So we just don't put anybody in there. It takes you about 2 years of knowledge to get this fully under your belt. You know, so it's a learning process. So when you get in, you know, you have to get accredited. So it's going to take you about a year to get all your accreditations and then start doing the jobs.
Thank you.
So what would be the qualifications of that person coming in?
Well, we would request a veterans benefit specialist. That person would have to have at least 4 years of experience. We were lucky when I got here in 2015, we got Oscar Rodriguez from the VA regional office in Milwaukee. He was driving back and forth, and he lived maybe 5 minutes away from our office, and we got him, and he worked out great for us, and he went on to do bigger and better things with the Federal Aviation Administration. So we hopefully we get lucky again. So all we can do is pray for that.
Well, thank you so much for your presentation and for all that you and your staff do. I'm constantly referring people over there. I hope they're showing up.
Keep sending them. Keep sending them.
Any other questions for anyone else? All right. Thank you very much.
For your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, any other business as authorized by law? I have none.
As you're aware, the budget is getting released this evening. We have our joint Human Service Committee, Human Service Board meeting scheduled for October 19th. That'll be down at the Job Center in the Commons area, so the entrance C or D will get you right there. And if anyone has any questions between now and then about the budget, as you're looking at it, please reach out to me and we can set up time to meet with you either individually or if there's a few of you want to come in at the same time, Tammy and I and the division directors would be happy to sit down with you before that meeting. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Supervisor, I apologize for not putting this on the agenda, but I wanted to give you a quick update on Lake Behavioral Hospital.
Great.
We just found out yesterday morning that the Secretary Timberlake at DHS did sign off on it. So our next, we just had a meeting with Corporation Council today. We're in the process of drafting the mutual aid agreements for our local law enforcement agencies and then the two agencies that we'll be having to travel through in Illinois. But fingers crossed, within the next 60 days, we should be able to have our connection so that we can have some of our folks be able to be seen for their mental health needs a whole lot closer to home. So thank you.
Thanks for that positive update.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Rebecca?
Yes.
What is going to be going on with Kenosha Hospital?
Well, interestingly, we have not been consulted about that, so I can't give you an idea. You know, when people talk about putting mental health services in, there's a wide range of what that means. Mm-hmm. So as we know, we've talked about some of our providers like Rogers. Rogers has a great niche in the community, but they don't always treat our most ill. So I don't foresee that they will be actually taking our most sick. Okay. Into the Kenosha Hospital at this point in time. They will certainly be providing a value to the community if they're able to provide some inpatient and outpatient services, but I still think we're going to need a connection with Lake, which is closer, just to be able to serve those that are truly the most at need in our community and fit into that emergency detention population.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a great question. Any other business? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We are adjourned.